Hello, this is your radio host, Helena Lay, and I am here once again every Thursday, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time with Alan Lissauer. Alan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. We're coming to you from the heart of Los Angeles, where it's actually not that bad in terms of weather compared to the rest of the country. We're very blessed, but we are in the heart of what we call foreclosure country.
Right, right. Speaking of foreclosures, there was actually an article the other day that says that foreclosures are actually down. Do you have a response to any of the information? It says the number of California homes entering the formal foreclosure process dropped in the second quarter to its lowest level since early 2007. The deadline stems from a combination of factors, including an improving housing market, the gradual burning off of Erragus mortgages originated from 2005 to 2007, and the growing use of short sales, a real estate information service reported.
Yes, they do. I have quite a few things to say about that, and let me give them to you in some type of reasonable order. First of all, the California State Legislature, in its wisdom, has passed a new law requiring the banks to actually go through the modification process and not foreclose during that time. This has really stopped a lot of foreclosures in our state in particular. Furthermore, there's been the Attorney General's settlement, which has also encouraged modification. These two factors alone have held the banks back, along with the scandal regarding robo-signing. So it hasn't been that easy to foreclose. But the biggest reason of all is that the banks are keeping the properties. They have over a million homes in what's called shadow inventory.
Right.
And that shadow inventory is sitting there, bank-owned properties that they are not allowing on the market. One of the reasons is to keep the inventory low and to raise the prices somewhat. So let me give you an example. If anyone's out there with a little calculator, try this exercise. You're sitting there with, say, 100,000 homes, okay, and each home is worth $100,000. If you can do the math on that, it's about $10 million, not $100 million. If the prices go up 2% on that, you've now made yourself $20 million, okay? So withholding inventory from the market increases the prices. It's kind of like a dam in a river. You're holding all that water back. But eventually, something has to happen with those homes. So this is kind of a false sense that's going on. It really doesn't mean people are not having problems. It just means that there's a dam been built for the moment. And I would call it more like an earthen beaver dam than a cement dam.
So what is your response to the 554,615 notice of defaults that were recorded on homes and condos April through June 2012?
Can you repeat that? Did you say 554,000?
No, I said 54,615.
Okay.
Notice of defaults were recorded just in April through June.
Well, what I would say is I feel for those people because that's their home. And you multiply that by three or four and you have 200,000 people now worried about where they're going to live. And you have a society of displaced people. I'm just going to go off topic for a second, not too far, but if anyone has saw 60 Minutes this past week, they were talking about people who are living in the trucks and trailers and sending their children to school in Florida. And there's thousands of them. These kids are being brought up in vans, and they go to bathrooms in gas stations, and that's because they've lost their homes. So my response to 55,000 people getting notice of default is, If you're listening or anyone you know is listening to us, please give us a call. I'm not saying we can save your house, but we can give you advice that may get you a result other than losing your home.
So please explain, Alan, your company, once again, Advanced Economic Strategies. But if the people, if the consumers would want to look up your website, they would have to go to www.financialsanitynow. Is that correct?
Yes, we use Financial Sanity Now because we think people will remember it. We want, and the other reason is we want people to have financial sanity now.
And you mentioned to call. So the telephone number that you have listed here is the 866-753-4028. That's correct?
Yes, we recommend you call that number. And you definitely will get a call back within 24 hours.
So what is it that Advanced Economic Strategies or Financial Sanity Now does? You're mentioning that you could potentially help these people with notice of defaults. What is it that your company does in order to help?
There's several things. But first of all, if you're in California, it's different than if you're in other states. In other states, we recommend getting our book. Our book is The Homeowner's Guide, basically, to mortgage relief. You can find it on the website. It's very reasonable. Go through that. I think it'll answer many of your questions. Then we're also available for you to give us a call. It doesn't cost anything. Just give us a call. If we can give you some advice and regarding the book, we'll be happy to do it. We're here to help people. Okay? If you're in the state of California, we may be able to help you by actually contacting the bank for you and working with the bank.
So basically, if people have these NODs, there's still a potential to wipe what they owe away or to place it towards the rear and to allow the consumer to stay inside their home, because from what I understand from what we've gone over these past few weeks is that your company helps to get the consumer a lower affordable mortgage payment.
That's correct.
And your company is also known to stop some foreclosure sale dates.
Well, I'll tell you about stopping. It's not like we're Superman and we fly around and just stop a sale. We do talk to the banks, and if we can get some information to them that can show that the consumer can make a reasonable payment, then we can work on stopping the sale with the bank.
That's wonderful. So I know you said you have a testimonial you wanted to read before our live interview with Randy Gouge. Do you want to go over that right now?
I do.
This will be the time.
I do. Because this is from a gentleman, and he has permitted us to use his name. A very nice gentleman. Actually, he used to work for the bank that held his mortgage. Quite interesting. And he is a banker. So here's what he says. He says, "Dear sirs, my name is James Hagopian. I first heard about Alan and AES, that's Advanced Economic Strategies, which we'll call AES from now on, from a family member who told me how AES had helped save their home from foreclosure. I called Alan, set up an appointment in early April of 2012. At this point, I already had a foreclosure sign taped on my front door. That's a sale. They were selling his home. Almost immediately, I felt a sense of relief when I met with Alan. His assuring words that he would be able to help me convinced me that he was the one that would help me get out of the mess. I got into this mess due to unemployment and a layoff a year earlier. And now here's some facts," he writes. "I had a $334,500 first mortgage at 6.65 interest only, with monthly payments of $1,845 in interest alone. In addition, I pay taxes of $300, monthly insurance of $91.67, up to a total of $2,236.67. I was paying with the knowledge that it would increase greatly because interest rate was ending in 5 years. In other words, it would change at that point. The loan was a combination of a first and a second that I had done earlier when I thought I was combining the two into a first and it would save me in the long term. However, the interest rates were too high at the time. Hence, I was offered an interest rate payment for the first 5 years. It was never explained to me that the rate would increase the current market rate plus 2% when the 5 years were up. Now, thanks to the team at AES, I mean a home affordable modification trial period plan and a permanent modification agreement. My monthly payment, now you have to hear this, and I know I sound like an infomercial, which includes principal, interest, tax, and insurance, is now $1,244.05 at a fixed rate. That's saving me $992 per month. Advanced Economic Strategies was able to accomplish this feat in 2 months. I originally attempted to modify the loan directly with the lender, although they came back with an offer, which was only $200 less than the original note. They did not offer me the HAMP program and reduce the rate only 1%. This was of no help to me. The documents contained in all the HAMP program words and statements, but in the end, the offer was not a HAMP. Holland discovered this the minute he saw the offer and knew exactly what to do. The financial stress relief after all this was worth every penny. As a result of this process, I've learned to keep better records, how to manage my finances better, which AES also taught me, and I have become educated as to what's happening in the economy and how it relates to me. Advanced Economic Strategies followed through on everything they said they would do. I provided the hardship letter and financial information. They did the rest and kept me reassured. Advanced Economic Strategies has an excellent website, financialsanitynow.com. Now, I just want to say this. When I read this letter, I don't know how other people feel, but I feel thankful that I was able to help this man. I feel thankful that he had the faith to say, let me help you. Because for everyone out there, we all need help. When my car goes bad, I need help from a mechanic. When I need to change my diet, I need help from a dietitian. All we're saying is we do understand what's going on here, and we are able to help people, and that's what we want to do.
That's incredible, Alan. Honestly, kudos to you and kudos to your company for working very hard and helping that gentleman. You said his name was James Hagopian, and he himself is actually a banker. Is that what?
He works for a bank.
And you're saving him almost $1,000 per month. $922 per month?
$992.
Oh, my goodness. That's almost $1,000 a month in savings. Imagine what you could put that extra $1,000 a month into. You could put it towards a savings, towards an emergency medical fund. You could put it towards a vacation, what most Americans actually really need these days. So, I mean, that's great, and I really hope.
And the main thing is it's a fixed loan. So he's hedged, what the banks would call, they're hedging against further inflation whenever it does come.
That's wonderful. And you fixed his loan. Wow. So on top of the savings, you got him out of this horrible loan, and I think that's great. That's great. So we are going to have a guest coming on in a few minutes, but before we have the guest on, I guess I just wanted to go through what people can do in order to get in contact with you. They can go to your Facebook website, Financial, FINANCIAL, Sanity, SANITY, now. And they could like your Facebook link. Your telephone number is on there, telephone number 866-753-4028. Or they can go to your website, www.financialsanitynow.
That's correct.
And if they don't feel comfortable with going to your website or by calling, they can always email you. And from what I understand, it's alan@aes77.com. That's alan@advancedeconomicstrategies.com.
That's right. Or, of course, you mentioned the phone number. And once again, they can always get the book by going to the website. That'll give them a lot of information. Okay.
That's wonderful. Oh, my goodness. It's incredible how many people you help. And just, I mean, hearing the stresses of this job. How do you balance it all? How do you help all these people?
Well, to Advil help.
Yeah. And then, I mean, just on a personal note, to allow the consumers to kind of personally relate to you, you also experienced a hardship.
Oh, yes, I did. I experienced it very much. I write about it on my website, but I was hit by a car as a pedestrian, and it was very hard for me to pay my mortgage. I also had one of those adjustable loans, which at that time was going up, and my payment was increasing over $1,500 a month from the previous 3 years. And at that point, it was right before the economic collapse, but before there were any programs available for homeowners, which there are now. And again, I explain that in the book, what programs are available. So what happened is I worked with the bank and got to modify my own home. And as I did that, and I was sitting in a wheelchair doing it, there were friends of mine who'd come over. They were homeowners and said, "Really? Can you do that?" And I go, "Yeah, I did it." And from there, it kind of sprung into something I could do sitting in a wheelchair, working with people and working with the banks. And that's how it started. So I guess even an accident can turn into a blessing.
But you're not in a wheelchair anymore. You're walking around.
Walking around.
Fully able-bodied and...
Thank God.
Thank God, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So on primary mortgages, California homeowners were a median 8 months behind on their payments when the lender finally filed a notice of default. The borrowers owed a median of about $17,864 on a median of $313,000 of a mortgage, and on home equity loans and lines of credit in default, borrowers owed a median of $5,227 on a median of $75,000 owed towards their second mortgage. Basically, it showed that they're about, give or take, 8 months delinquent before the lender actually filed an NOD. Is that still the case these days, or how quickly do the lenders file NODs?
Well, again, depends on the state. In California, after 3 months, they're allowed to file an NOD. I think because the paperwork backlog is so great, they don't do it for probably 5 to 8 months.
I was informed that we have our guest, Randy, on the line. Randy, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
And for the record, your name is Randy Gaumond?
Gaumond,
right. And you're speaking today with Alan Massauer.
Hi, Alan.
And Helena Lay.
I'm pretty good.
So nice to speak with you. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you became interested in finance and overall money?
Well, I've just always been interested in learning as much of various subjects as I can.
Randy, pause for one moment. Can you speak a little bit more into the phone?
Yeah, I'm talking right into it. You know,
okay.
Let me switch over to the other cordless phone here.
I
got
no, we can hear you. Yeah, we want to make sure
but...
we can hear you correctly so you could educate our,
right,
our viewers.
Let's try this one here. How's this one? Is this one any better?
Yeah, much better.
Okay.
Just make sure to speak into the phone there.
Okay. So anyway, I've always had a love of learning stuff. I've worked in various fields, mechanic, machinist, welder. I write articles on various subjects. So anyway, just through the Internet, I gave myself quite an education, and I started reading stuff, and I came across this article one day called The Credit River Decision. Have you heard of that?
No.
Okay.
Can you repeat that for us?
Pardon?
Can you repeat that for us?
All right, let me turn the volume up on this one here. This is really bad.
The Credit River Decision. Tell us about it. Are we losing Randy?
Randy, are you here with us?
No, this one doesn't have a volume control on it. Anyway, I can hardly hear you. You still there?
Okay, well, just make sure to speak into the phone, and hopefully we can interact
right,
and educate our
head.
Viewers.
Anyway, back in 1968, there was a man whose home was in foreclosure, and he was challenging the bank on the basis that they had no inherent right to foreclose on his property because they didn't put anything into the pot. They had created the loan out of thin air. And so they had a jury trial. There was a justice of the peace who was serving as a judge. His name was Martin V. Mahoney, and he died. It was speculated that he was murdered in 1969 because of this decision. And the Federal Reserve notes were declared to be nothing more than debt-bearing corporate notes with no intrinsic value behind them. And so, therefore, if that's what the bank was alleging that it put up is part of the deal for the home loan, that they had actually no interest in it. And so, therefore, they could not foreclose on something they had no interest in.
Interesting.
Yeah. Andy, can you hear me? So, I have a question.
All right, let me say one more thing.
A question.
Okay. Right, go ahead.
You're familiar with the way all the housing crisis came about, where these notes were taken and sold to various people and then resold to other people and then securitized, and then no one really knew who the owner of the note was, and then these were all robo-signed. Did you hear about that scandal?
Yeah, robo-signed is just one part of it. But again, they're creating these fictitious loans out of thin air.
You were saying with the River decision.
Credit River decision.
What's the name of it again?
Credit River decision. It happened in
the Credit River
Township in Wisconsin.
That the bank really had no interest in the property. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay, so what is your... Do you understand what has happened with robo-signing and these notes?
Oh, yeah, I know the problem. It's just more fraud on top of fraud.
Right, fraud on top of fraud.
Can you explain yourself a little more for our listeners?
Yeah, well, the robo-signing is just more fraud on top of the original fraud of the alleged loan that the bank created out of thin air.
Okay. So
now, a friend of mine and his wife made a business out of using this court decision that used to be called SmartCom Capital. I don't know what they're called now, but I emailed this information to him, and he did some research on it, and it's the keystone of his wife's business in helping people stay in their home.
Okay, repeat that for our listeners.
Okay, the Credit River decision was the keystone piece of the basis of their business. They're using it to help people stay in their home, avoiding foreclosure, because they just go into court and they show that the bank has been committing fraud. And there's a maxim of law which states that fraud vitiates all that it comes into contact with. And so as soon as they show that there's fraud in the inducement or wherever, the alleged contract is void on its face. See, any alleged contract can be vacated for fraud, threat, duress, coercion, mistake, illegality, impossibility, insanity, immorality, or age of minority. Any of those 10 items can vacate a contract.
Then what would happen to the property itself at that point, according to this?
Well, it goes into limbo. Then you make a claim on it because nobody can show actual ownership. As soon as fraud touches something, it totally vacates it. Because, okay, back to the...
I'm, again, not advocating or disputing you, but what cases in present day have... been upheld by the courts regarding this.
Wait, what's that now?
I think what Alan's trying to say is, and there's like a little disconnect, I'm trying to really make you two connect here. Basically, a lot of the banks are not being held accountable for the fraud. A lot of the mortgage brokers that handed out illegal loans back in the early 2000s have not been held accountable for handing out loans that were now ruled illegal and then chopped up, sold off in different securitized entities, even to some investors such as judges, lawyers. I'm just speaking about in California, because you're in California, right, Randy?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
That's right. Okay,
yeah.
So we're just talking about in California, there are certain rumors, these aren't facts, that we have heard that some of the investors are actually judges. And there's a lot of, you know, fraud out there, and a lot of people aren't being held accountable. And exactly. So the consumer ends up really, you know, biting the bullet, taking the short end of the stick in these
exactly.
situations.
Yeah, and when I talked to you earlier, Helena, I mentioned to you the three magic questions. Did you share those with Alan?
Yes.
Okay, what
you
want to
go over it now? Let's go over it.
No, what I would like to do is related to the listeners out there. We're trying to find, and I really appreciate your input, and I appreciate you as a guest, but we're trying to find out how can our listeners, you know, save their homes? How can they use this information to understand better how to deal with banks and how
okay.
to save their homes?
All right. Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to understand that the banks do not deal in actual money, okay? They use Federal Reserve notes,
to people. Yeah.
Which is fiat currency. It has no intrinsic value to it. And the fraud in that right there completely vacates any possible judgment that could be going against the homeowner. They're not the actual homeowner to begin with. And then they can't back it up with any...
ideally. Actually, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because Alan's company has a team where he sends forensic investigation on loan documents, title documents, in order to dispute when a lender is trying to foreclose on a home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually a part of what Alan does at Advanced Economic Strategies. If only all of those rules and regulations were actually withheld.
Right.
You know.
Okay, but, yeah. But if you're not going on a level playing field, why do you have to play the game?
Well, I think
how can you be forced to play a game on an unlevel playing field?
The answer is that it is not a level playing field. It's a shrew. But it is the rules are pretty much made by the banks and the lobbyists.
Yeah, corporations are being considered people now.
What law anywhere printed up in any country states that a person or an individual, I should say, has to allow themselves to be made a victim of somebody's crime?
Well,
the moment you sign the note. So many people sign...
But there is no contract there because the five essential elements of what determine what a contract is have been vacated. It's right there in Black's Law Dictionary.
Right. Do you want to read that for us?
Hold on. It's right on my bookshelf here.
So basically, you know, ideally, while you locate that, if the, you know, your rules and your theories would actually apply, no fraud would exist. We would be an honest world. We would have equal playing field. And, you know, lenders would have to deal with the actual consequences of these illegal loans. Certain loans that have now been ruled illegal would be dealt with justifiably without the consumer even coming to the bank. I know Alan has expressed to me that he's had clients that were unaware that they were being sold illegal loans, and that they signed up for these illegal loans, and then, you know, they're trying to fix their loan, and the bank isn't even cooperating. So there's a battle that everybody has to go through in order to get something fair. So going back to what you originally stated, did you want to read something to us?
Yes, I do. It's here on page 224 of Black's Law Dictionary, 6th edition, abridged, and it says, a contract is a promise or a set of promises for the breach of which the law gives a remedy or the performance of which the law in some way recognizes as a duty. And then it goes on. It says, its essentials are competent parties, subject matter, a legal consideration, mutuality of agreement, and mutuality of obligation. Now, what it means by essentials means they absolutely have to be there. Like, you absolutely have to have oxygen to breathe, right? It's an essential.
Right.
You have to have the right temperature. It's an essential. You have to have water to drink. It's an essential, et cetera. Without any of those things, your body's going to die, right? And
right.
So with a contract, if you violate any of those five essential elements, it's no longer a bona fide contract. It is something less than a contract.
Have him.
And it's enforced at the point of a gun. It's an imposition.
We're going to write it down.
You see? This is all very simple logic here.
Okay, go through those five essential elements again for everyone.
Okay. Competent parties, subject matter, a legal consideration, mutuality of agreement, and mutuality of obligation. Okay, you can't go and make a contract with somebody to commit an immoral act. Right? You can't make a contract and pay them $1 million and say, okay, now, Freddie, you're going to go out and get drunk every night and go down to the local wherever, and the guy doesn't do it. Well, you can't get your $1 million back because you can't hold him to an immoral contract. You can't make a contract with somebody to commit a crime.
Okay, let's take a mortgage. Let's go back to a basic mortgage, okay, before even this occurred. You
right.
go to a
Where's
bank,
the neutrality
bank
of agreement?
Has deposits. You with me?
What's that?
I'm going to go through basic mortgage understanding. You with me here? Okay.
Yeah.
This is before all the notes were securitized, et cetera. You go to a bank. Mm-hmm. You say to the bank, I want to buy a house. The bank says,
right.
It's a $100,000 house. Put $20,000 down. We'll loan you $80,000 based on your credit.
Right.
The bank has that money because they've borrowed it either through the Federal Reserve or it's depositor money.
Okay.
You sign a contract stating I'll pay you back at 5% interest for 30 years.
Right. You sign a paper.
How is that contract not proper?
Because there's no lawful money being exchanged. It's fiat currency with no intrinsic value to it.
Can you elaborate for us?
Well, it says in the Constitution that only gold and silver shall be made in payment of debt or used in payment of debt. Fiat currency
Can you quote that part of the Constitution because I'm not familiar with it?
I don't have my copy with me. I'd have to go dig through my briefcase. I've got
no problem.
Edition.
No problem.
Yeah. But anyway, believe me, it's in there. It says nothing but gold and silver shall be used in payment of debt. Because the founding fathers saw the folly of fiat currency systems, just like in my paper that I sent to you, what is money? Money is an idea backed by confidence. And by how much confidence there is in what you're using as your medium of exchange determines how much of a money it is. Okay. The less purchasing power that is perceived to be in a medium of exchange, to that degree, it's not money. And that's why we're on the cusp of our U.S. dollar collapsing right now, is because more and more people are waking up to the fact that it's losing more and more confidence every day. And that's basically all inflation is. It's a decrease in the perceived purchasing power of a fiat currency.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but we've been off the gold standard for a long time now.
And look at our inflation since then.
You can't expand your currency unless you stay off the gold standard. That's
right.
been an argument around, that's been back and forth in America for a long time.
Right, but that's beside the point. See, the bankers have been given enough rope to hang themselves with.
All right, I think that's another part of the equation. The way the currency is handled, but to go back to a gold standard would be cumbersome, I think, to say the least.
No, all we have to do is not have. All we have to do is not have more paper in circulation, and there is gold to back it up. Where's the problem in that?
Well, the problem is
just
not enough gold to back it up.
Huh? Oh, sure. There's tons and tons of gold in the Grand Canyon that they refuse to mine. There's more than enough gold and silver on this planet.
I think it all comes down to trade value, and, you know, everything is worth different. Everything, you know, there's different values for different materials, different substances, oil included.
Okay. Well, do you know where the saying came from, worth its weight in gold? It came from back when, before we had refrigeration, people used to use spices to preserve their meats, salt and stuff like that, and they traded on par with gold. An ounce of spices or salt or whatever was worth an ounce of gold because the amount of human labor between those commodities was basically on par. Okay? Now, we're not talking about volumes here. We're talking about something that is, you know, easily measured, which is weight. You have a balanced stick. You have a dish at each end, and you put some of one side or something on one side and some something on the other, and when they balance out, well, that's your equal measures by weight.
Right.
But you can equate with the gold, the value of the gold in terms of U.S. dollars, which are now not based on anything of any intrinsic value, with something that does have intrinsic value to it. There's human labor invested in the gold and the silver or the salt, collecting it, or the spices, you see? So what we're basically doing in an economy is we're trading labor for labor. And there's something that has to be an equalizer to show that everybody's putting the same amount of labor into the pot of society.
Well, that's
money is just
a
lubricant in the machinery of the economy.
That's very important.
Pardon?
It is,
I think
that's
a caller coming through.
No, we're not going to take that call because we're doing a live interview. I have a couple of questions for you, Randy. So you wrote this article called What is Money? And from it you said, from money, we go into other subjects such as banking, inflation, and finance.
Yeah.
And you wanted to properly define money, and you said it's an idea backed by confidence.
Right.
Right? And it acts as a sort of lubricant in the dry mechanics of an economy.
Mm-hmm. Because if you have a cow and a sheep and you want to trade it for a flock of chickens, well, you're going to have to find somebody who's got a flock of chickens that wants to trade for your cow and your sheep, right?
Well,
it's pretty cumbersome to be hauling your livestock all over the country to find somebody who wants to trade with you what you have or you want from them. So this money acts as an intermediary to make the trades go smoother.
Another part of this article that stuck out to me was these economic collapses are always the result of a socialist, communist, and fascist type of government.
Yeah, all those things roll together.
Can you elaborate
on what we're into right now? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do we have now?
Well, it's like a hybrid. You know, it's not one of any of them. It's something of all of them. We've got corporate fascism going on. We've got socialism. We've got social security programs and all these government agencies that don't do anything but give away electronic bookkeeping entries to people.
So you're against Social Security?
Yeah.
So you're against Social Security?
Oh, what's that? Am I against it?
Yeah.
I should say not that we shouldn't look after the elderly and the disabled. That's what the old community chest program used to be about. But that was all wiped out with the Social Security Act of 1955.
So what are you proposing we do for our senior citizens in the United States?
Well, people ought to be able to save in a real bank their hard-earned assets and not have to worry about them being stolen when the bank collapses, like the FDIC. Well, they only insure up to, what is it, I think they increased it now to 100,000 or something. It used to be up to 20,000. If you had more than $20,000 in your account, well,
Alan's saying a quarter million. He's not going to be shy anywhere. He's going to say when he disagrees.
It's a quarter million.
Okay.
Okay.
But it's a quarter million now.
Yeah.
But why is there a cap? Is what he's questioning.
Yeah. But what is a quarter million dollars value these days anyway?
Okay.
As compared to back in 1920, what would a quarter million dollars back in 1920 buy you, as opposed to today? You ever hear of the Weimar Republic when they had the mark collapse? In 1921, I think it was, a 50,000 mark note could buy you a whole house. And just 2 years later, 1923, it couldn't even buy you a loaf of bread. Why is that? It's because there was no intrinsic value in the Deutschmark at the time. There was nothing of any value behind it. So the purchasing power of the mark had decreased, where in 2 years you could go and buy a complete house, so you can't even feed your kids with a loaf of bread.
Right, that's very sad. Okay, moving on. So another part of this article, you related that back in 1925, an ounce of gold would buy a man a pretty nice suit, and today an ounce of gold would still buy a man a pretty nice suit. As we all know, gold prices have actually risen in the recent months, and you also wrote, today it still takes about the same amount of time and labor to locate and collect an ounce of gold.
Right.
But don't get confused now over the fact that dollars don't equate with dollars since 1925.
Right.
Right? And you're referring to basic living expenses.
And what's that?
Are you referring to basic living expenses as far as dollars
to
dollars?
If we didn't have inflation, you wouldn't have to be spending $4.50, $4.50 for a gallon of gas. Okay? Back when I was
or we could just go green and figure out another way to travel. Something else to burn, you know.
Yeah. You see, gasoline was only 25 cents a gallon back when I was in high school in 1974.
Oh, yeah, I remember when it was 99 cents back when Clinton was in.
Yeah, you see? So why are things becoming more expensive? It's because the perceived purchasing power of the fiat currency is decreasing day by day, and that's all that inflation is. People want to have more of what's losing value so they can trade for what they got yesterday.
Right. And you said these pieces of ink paper are Federal Reserve notes with no value to them.
No determinable value. Yep, that's right.
What are you referring to?
Decisions. Yeah, it's exactly true.
The dollar bill?
Yeah. It's not an actual dollar bill. It's a Federal Reserve note of undeterminable value. It cannot be determined how much it's worth because there's nothing of value backing it up. When Nixon took us off the gold standard completely in 1971, what happened right after that, or shortly after that? We started getting double-digit inflation under Nixon, right?
Right.
And there was a Saudi prince who was asked why they were jacking up the prices so high on the crude oil. And he said, well, why should we hoard worthless U.S. dollars instead of gold?
Interesting. So you've shared so much information with us in the last almost half hour. I do want to ask you a few more questions before we let you go, because we have a very short amount of time to cover three vital things for the show. And basically, as far as debt, what is your opinion on how would you advise consumers in getting rid of their debt?
You know, a friend of mine, he's got over $80,000 in credit card debt. He's been out of work for a couple years, and he's been living off his credit cards, and he sold a classic car that he had, and he got like $20,000 for it. So he's barely got his ears above water right now, okay? And he takes a gulp of air every once in a while. But he, for some reason, has this idea that he actually has a real obligation to pay these credit cards off when it's just debt created out of thin air. It's some electronic bookkeeping entries created by a few keystrokes.
I guess what the bank would say to you is, because I deal with the banks a lot, is that you spent the money, you used the money. He used the money.
But he didn't. In that instance,
do you know if he's paying high interest rates on them? Are they on 0% interest?
I have no idea. I just know what he told me. You know, like I said, he's
I would talk to him. I would talk to him, and I would definitely advise him to call Alan, because a part of what they do at Advanced Economic Strategies is they help to lower people's debt. I mean, they've settled credit card debt as low as 10% on the dollar. You take $100,000 and you settle it for $10,000, your point is proven. It is just a data entry that can be negotiated.
Yeah, you see, here's the thing. He believes and he's totally convinced that he's doing the right thing by paying off these
If he's convinced, then that's something he's going to have to deal with. And as his friend, you're just going to have to, you know, respect his opinion, since that's what he feels
that's
obligated
to
do. But what you can do is you can advise him that, you know, if he could try to settle it out himself, or he could call Alan, or he could ask if they can lower his interest rates, and if they give him a difficult time, I would once again have him call Advanced Economic Strategies, because another thing they do is they get people 0% on their credit card debt, which allows them to, quote-unquote, do the right thing, pay back what they owed, but, at you know, by they save so much money by not paying the interest. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So
if he wants to go that route. Well, he's been working with the credit card company, and I think that they reduced his payment. I don't know exactly what's going on.
Oh,
but,
God.
But, At any rate, the euro is about to implode, and when it goes, the U.S. dollar is going to be totally toast, too.
Yeah. Well, we definitely want to touch bases with you again and see what is going to, you know, be continuing to happen with the euro and whatnot. So I wanted to thank you sincerely, and Alan wanted to thank you.
I want to thank you. It's
for joining
been a
us on our
you.
On our show. It really has,
and all the best.
All the best, and you know, keep on publishing your work. And is there anywhere that the viewers can find your pieces online or anything?
I was just going to ask you if I could forward you the rest of my documentation. I finally got them transferred over from my old computer to the new one.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good. Okay, Randy, we
put up on your website.
That sounds great. So why don't you do this? Forward me what you have, and we'll talk off air, and we will talk to you. I'll talk to you later on today and hopefully next week.
All right, and I'd like to come into your studio and do a show since I'm not very far away from you.
Okay, wonderful. Another time, we have to go. We have to continue on with the show, but I will talk to you off air.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Bye, Randy.
Bye.
That was Randy, ladies and gentlemen. That was really, he has a lot of interesting articles. I mean, one of them is called What is Money? Another one is called The Logic of Meter. And then he has one that's called The Three Vital Questions. And another one called The Elastic Money Supply, and I'm sure he's going to forward me over a lot of other interesting pieces. But now it is time for the weekly Bash on the Bank. And I'm hoping that we have some good information here and as to which bank has been acting corrupt this week. So, the weekly Bash on the Bank, and which bank takes the cake this week?
The bank that takes the cake this week is, drum roll, the Bank of America.
And why is it Bank of America this week, Alan?
I'll tell you why it is. Bank of America, we had a client who had put in a modification with the Bank of America. So his income was $6,000 a month. And the Bank of America decided, after this has been in there for almost a year, the Bank of America came back and said he's disqualified from getting a modification because his income is $10,000 a month. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute on this. The Bank of America got the income wrong. They placed it incorrectly.
What did they place it at?
They placed it at $10,000, but it was $6,000, and it was on the pay stub at $6,000. Therefore, they made a bank error. Now, we appealed the bank error, and they came back and said, no, you didn't appeal the bank error on time, even though it was appealed on time. So the bank has kept this customer running around in circles now for 12 months. So let's hear it for the Bank of America making a mistake and not even being willing to admit it.
Okay.
Was that the Bank of America over there?
Yeah, that was a nice little applause there.
All right. We realize, you know, God bless you people at the Bank of America if you're listening. We know you're overburdened. You have 40% of all the bad loans in the United States. But please, when you make an error, come back and admit your error and correct it. If a person has pay stubs that say $6,000, put it in correctly into your computer so you don't reject these people for a loan and cause them to go on Prozac. A lot of people are having nervous breakdowns over losing their homes. So, does that make sense to everyone?
That makes sense. And then, so next on our show is the weekly tips. Alan, do you have a couple of tips to give to our viewers before we take it
off
there?
And some of them are going to be a little mundane, but one thing I want you to do, if you're working with a bank, I want you to get the book. And this time, I really think get the book because there's charts in there. And one of the charts is when you speak to the bank, be sure to get the name, full name, ID number, and extension number of the person. Write down exactly what was said. When you fax something in, keep a note of the fax. Make sure your fax machine is updated so it gives you back the date that you sent in the information. My tip is called record keeping, something very simple, but unfortunately most people don't do. You've got to keep your records clear so that when there's mistakes, and there will be on the other side, you're able to prove that you have sent in what was asked for, you sent it in on time, and you sent it in accurately. And I ask everyone out there, keep your records straight.
Because if they don't, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. What was that?
That was a sound effect. That was an explosion.
That's very nice. I thought it was thunder. But, I think the important things for people to know right now, if you're whoever's out there, is make sure you keep your records straight.
That's now, really important.
I know it's difficult to call the banks. You get put on hold, you listen to a lot of music, and a lot of times you get disconnected from the banks. I know they don't return calls. I know all of these things are true. But what is the alternative?
Definitely not that.
No, I guess not. So, Helena Lay, our hour is almost gone by, and it's been such a pleasure talking with you. I'd just like everyone to know that our phone number, once again, is 866-753-4028. Our website, www.financialsanitynow.com. And our goal is to give you a little piece of sanity, as in the letter I read you from James Hagopian. He's sane now.
Great job, Alan. I hope that the consumers out there can reach you, and I hope you continue on your journey. And once again, if anybody wants to reach him, his telephone number 866-753-4028. Or you can email him, Alan, at aes77.com. AES stands for Advanced Economic Strategies. Their website, www.financialsanitynow.
Do I have just a second?
You have about 1 minute.
All right. I just want to give applause to the California legislature for passing the bill protecting homeowners more in this state than any other state. So that's my congratulations. We should add that to our show, a congratulations.